we're holding it here in Vav, in the Hakdama, sort of. What? He's speaking, well, let's, Vav is actually a sort of a parenthetical type of a chapter or subheading, and it's really referring back to what he said before. In Hay, he had spoken about the inyan of Agadata and how how Agadata is very deep, how a person needs to work at understanding Agadata, and so on. And then he says, we'll just back up to the paragraph, last paragraph in Hay. Because Chazal knew and understood the depth that they had in the Agadata, zirzu alehem, they pushed us to be careful with it, vizhiru min azilzul behem, and they warned us not to be mezalzel. V'amru, they said, kol hamalig al divrei chachamim nidar mitzayei reisachas, that someone who mocks or makes fun of Chazal, his onesh is tzor osachas. Now, tzor osachas means a boiling waste product. In other words, that itself is obviously a metaphor. He says, v'ein tzor osachas gedolu min asichlus asher hishit atonu lehalhig. So he says tzor osachas is the most appropriate metaphor for the mocking of Chazal. In other words, the person only saw the waste product. He only saw, it's just like when a person eats something, the body rejects the outer husk, the roughage, and takes in the core of it, the essence, the edible part of it. Here the person took the inedible part of the Chazal, and he's the fact that he's mocking and that's bubbling, so to speak, and he's, you know, he's making an asik out of it. That's sort of tzor osachas. He says, "Kvel kein lo timtza la olam moes bedivreihem ala ish mevakish taiva." The type of person that you'll find who despise Chazal is a bal taiva, no sein yisrael lemer goshos, the person who prefers physical pleasures over seichel. People who whose heart never were enlightened by the brighter lights. Let's explain this point, because this is a point that Ram says a few places, and it's worth considering on its own. The way we normally understand milus and chesronos of people, we tend to associate there's the realm of chachma and sichlus, meaning knowledge, understanding, and stupidity, ignorance. So those are two opposites, and that we understand well. And then there's also taiva and kedusha. It, on first glance, it does not seem to us to be any contradiction between somebody who's engrossed in physical taivas and yet a brilliant mind who knows a lot of chachma. It doesn't seem to us a stira in any way. The Rambam points out, and the Rambam, by the Rambam, this is a very fundamental point, is that they are inherently contradictory. The person we're not talking about mental abilities in terms of that so-and-so is able to do X amount of computations. That certainly is not a contradiction to somebody having a strong taiva. We're talking about a person's nefesh. Is the person a baal chachma, an oiv chachma? Is he somebody whose pleasure is focused on the chachma of something, of chachmas, or is the pleasure focused on the physical? Since the physical is always the external, the way it looks, smells, sounds, feels, and the chachma is always the inner. So what greets? So if you're used to dealing with people on a superficial level, then the person you'll gravitate to is somebody whose physical features are pleasant. If you're used to If you're Bal Chachma, you'll gravitate to a person whose inside has a lot that's engaging and engrossing. So there's going to be a there's going to be a clear distinction between a person whose primary enjoyments and pleasures are physical. That type of person is going to be a shallow person, and he will tend to take things as they greet the eye. The person who's a Baal Chachma will tend to sit inside. So when you have a statement of Chazal that on the surface it seems to be absurd or strange or something like that, the person who's a Baal Chachma, his first reaction is, what are Chazal trying to tell us? The person who's the superficial and Baal Taiva will say, another piece of stupid ignorance from Chazal. And that's why you have that the split between the two. It's the Rambam says it in many places. The Rambam sees real Chachma as being identified with, or if not identical, to Ruchnius. And then he says, now he brings an example of a Maimer Chazal, which in itself seems strange, and he will try to explain it. And because Chazal understood how much truth lies in their words, bilubem yemeyem, they spent their days engrossed in it, v'tzivu lishkor alem bitas halaylo v'ktzois hayom, and they told us to be engaged in it at night and in the day, v'somu matachlis, and they made this the purpose, the tachlis of the bria, k'moy shehinam v'amru, they said ein l'akadosh baruch hu olam chutz arba shalacha. It says in the Gemara Brachas that all HaKadosh Baruch has in this world is arba shalachas. Now v'spoyin b'zad dibur, he says, think into this, kim te'ayin boi kipshuto, if you take it literally, tir'eyu b'tachlis harochok, or I should say superficially instead of literally, tir'eyu b'tachlis harochok min emes, it's going to sound the thing most remote from truth. Ki'ilu arba amas shel halacha b'levadei tachlis. So okay, Yeredeya is the entire tachlis of the bria, ushar chachmas v'idiyas mishlachos. And what about this so much knowledge and science and everything out there? That's nothing. Ubezman shem ve'eva mishachav. And before it was halacha, it says there's a yeshiva of shem ve'eva. Halacha means tzivuyim, the way we have it. Shloisa shem halacha. So even though technically they could have kept these halachas, but it doesn't say, but they didn't have a status of halacha. Nimtza shalohoya l'Hashem b'olam klum. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was absent in this world. So he says, avim ta'ayim b'zeh dibur iyim pnimi. If you look into it with a deeper eye, tira boi min achach medvar pela, you're going to find extraordinary chachm in it. V'intu tza'eyu koilo dover godl min amaskolos, and you're going to find it including something extremely wise. I will explain it to you. So that it serves as an example. So listen well to what I'm saying. So he's going to try to explain this in a way that and to show you that you know that Chazal, whenever they said these things, there was something of extreme value. Vav da kakadmoinim choku hakiru nifla. The philosophers, the ones that preceded us, had a very strong chakira. They raised the following issue: kasher le min achochma v'tuva machshava, because they were wise. Vis ameset slum. And the one thing that was clear to them was shekoldov nimtza yeshlo bechreach tachlis as v'shulay simtziyotze. Everything that exists has a purpose. Ki ein shum dover shem tzavatola, nothing is created for naught. Now, this is something which was sort of acceptable, I believe, to the early Greeks. I think Aristotle solution to the issue is look at what everything is best for, and that is obviously its purpose. So a horse obviously is there to run and so on. Today, with our modern perspective of evolution, this actually doesn't stand, because since nothing was created purposefully and with intelligence, it just things happen to be accidentally come into being. The only questions are what fluke or what favorable conditions allowed this to come into being. But when they believed that there was some sort of intelligence, and even Aristotle, who didn't believe in a personal God the way we believe and understand, a God with will, but he definitely believed in God, in whatever you want to call it, some higher intelligence as a designer of the world, certainly needed to say that everything had a purpose. And when this became accepted as truth, this rule, they started by listing all the particular metzias. L'das tachlis kol minim aminim, to know the purpose of every single element. V'ro, ki kol nimtzo melachuti tachliso yidua. Ein tzorach bazelach akira. Anything that is a tool, the word melachuti here, for those who know modern Hebrew, is misleading. The word melachuti seems, in modern Hebrew, it means artificial. Here it means it's a tool. Or it's something that was, what's the right word for it? Something that was brought into existence through a process. So anything that was made certainly had a purpose. L'mashal, oimar shahamaso lo'aso napach, el'acha shachosh ha'ikulafit chibu zeh ha'etz. V'itztai b'nafshe tzuras ha'masor, v'nigash ha'sosgir nasebo. So when you see a saw, the smith that made the saw obviously wanted to cut wood, thought about what type of metal would be effective at sawing wood, and they came up with a saw. Hareshe tachas hamasor lenasebo. So obviously the purpose of the saw is to saw with it. V'chein tachas hakardom, the purpose of the axe, lachtoch bo, is to cut the wood. V'amachat l'chava bo beged, and so on. V'kach kol dvarim shenimtzu metzias lachuti. So anything that was brought into being through an artificial process, meaning a human process, definitely has a purpose. Aval kol ma shehimtze'ato hamolocha ha'loikis ha'chachma tivis, but that which God or nature seems to have brought into existence. Goy mine elonis ha'mine ha'sob mine ha'chzob mine ha'vonim mine ha'chayas. Some of those items, it's quite easy to figure out what they're there for. And some of them have an extraordinary, need an extraordinary amount of thought why it's there. And some of them have a tachlis that is so fine that we wouldn't know it. Unless we know it through some prophecy and so on. It's very interesting. But you can't have any real scientific, but it means any human intelligence cannot be aware of it. I want to stop at a certain point, at this point, and express something fascinating. We know, you know, like we said before, today that the acceptable theory of everything is evolution, we find that one would expect that this not be true. One would expect that there are things that exist without a tachlis and so on. Yet the world has taken on a what the right word for it to call it is, I won't say Avodah Zarah, but it's become like the major cause of the world is to prevent any type of extinction of species. And it seems strange. If you're telling me that species just happen to come about, What makes you at all think that there would be a reason that we need to give on to certain species? The old thing goes, we never know where you'll find the next cure for cancer, for this or the other thing. Well, why would we think? I mean, these are just all sorts of little accidents of evolution, flukes. And why would we think that any species that's not edible and useful, let's get rid of it? And yet down deep we say, no, everything it must have a purpose, that everything has something to contribute, and it's, you know, almost hysterically with hysteria, it's sort of this seems to be like the cause of our generation. Another thing, we realize now that people have removed all sorts of odd pieces from the mix. You know, they've eradicated this, that, the other one, and all of a sudden, the entire ecology of a place collapses. And this was an unimportant little butterfly, mouse, ant, whatever it is, and somehow, so someone would ask, what's the purpose of this ant or whatever it is? You would say, nothing. No one eats it, no one touches it, nothing happens to it, let's get rid of it. And then when you get rid of it, things collapse. So he says, and he says there are many things that are not scientifically possible. Why some insects have wings, some don't. The variety of insects. So some things is just impossible, doesn't give us any, we'll never figure out. Even though today, we certainly have fascinating, we keep learning new things. There's a whole branch of science which mimics nature. You know, to look to nature, how nature solved its problems. And to copy it. All sorts of extremely useful things. Aval dvar shem yisig doy lemeilu, upolam yisig golu, but the bigger picture, knowing more and understanding what it's there for, certainly gives you more knowledge. And the more the person studies and perseveres, and he's got a better grasp of things, we understand more and more things. When a kashbar gave Shlomo chachma, he understood the tachlis of every min. And that's what he spoke about. What's the purpose of every tree and grass and animal? I want to stop a second and talk about this, which is fascinating in terms of what is knowledge and science. Let's see if I, imagine we wander into somebody from an extremely backward place, from the rainforests in the Amazons or somewhere in the Pacific or whatever, happens to come into a modern city, and he sees tons and tons of machines and different things. There are two things that studying about these machines involve. One is to figure out what they're there for. Again, using the axiom that no thing is here unless someone had a reason to make it come here. Secondly, and somebody else is interested in how it works. Because modern science rejects the axiom or thesis about everything being created for a purpose, the only angle it can go with is what is the mechanism of everything, and maybe sometimes there's a useful mechanism. Our perspective on the Bria around us is everything was made for a purpose, so certainly studying the purpose is much more important to us than studying the mechanism. Imagine somebody got a computer with a lot of nice programs on it, and the person has, let's say, Word on it or Excel spreadsheet or something like that, there's one part of knowing about it is knowing how to use the program effectively. And what can I do with it and how do I do it? And that would require simply knowing all the things that you can press, pull, push on the screen and what comes out of it and how to use it effectively. There's also the discipline of understanding how, you know, what commands create this. But the primary significance when you get a computer loaded with these programs, the first thing is really to know what can you do with it, to look at it in terms of purpose. So he said, Shlomo HaMelech, it doesn't say that he understood the mechanisms. I don't know that Shlomo HaMelech rivaled modern scientists the way he describes it, but the other hand, he knew exactly what the purpose of each thing was and what its use is, and that basically gives man the full array of tools that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bria. So I can imagine somebody has Word. I have a friend of mine who owned a large company, and when computer word processing started, he was very annoyed with his workers. He told me that his secretaries think that it's simply an electric typewriter. They don't begin to understand that it's a whole different world in terms of how you use it. So he says, so Shlomo HaMelech knew and understood that was a proof that he had a divine intelligence, a divine granted intelligence. Ach, al derech haklal, kol hanimtzoyim tazgal gireach omnam hunza shodun fad. Anything under the galgal gireach, in the Rambam's world perspective, there's a ring. You know, all the planets they form concentric rings, and the moon around the earth is the closest concentric ring, and anything in that ring within that ring is human-centered, and therefore everything within that is all shaykh to person. Above that, the Rambam says, is its own world. The Rambam talks about sichlim nivdolim. The Rambam sees those planets as being entities with their own purpose. But as far as anything that's down within the Levana, that's for man. So he says, of all the animals, some a person eats, you have pack animals, and some of them we just don't know. They all have a talus for a person, we don't know. So it's interesting, I don't know if the Rambam entertains secondary toelas, like if let's say you have animals that you need in order to eat dead animals so that they don't create disease and everything. So you might have a vulture or animals that eat, you know, carrion and so on. Maybe they don't have a direct use for us, but they're there to keep things clean and clear and so on. I'm not sure. V'chein elonis me'emni zoynei, same thing true, some are for food, some are there for medication. V'chein asovim, v'kocha kol aminim. V'chol ma she'tim tzeba l'chayim v'atzmochem sh'eimot te'elis, v'in azonu v'imach sh'avtecho. And anything that you find of the animals or the flora that we don't find any te'elis, ha'rezel chosh madeinu, it's our weakness, we don't know. They cannot have existence unless there's some sort of talus for man. And the proof for it is, you find constant new discovery of different plants and so on that contribute something to human welfare. If you can tell us rabbis, nobody can know all of it, but as time goes on, people make use of it, and they, hey, this is great for dye, this is great for medication, this is great for something else. Vishema toima volomli vasamen misim. And why did God create poisons? Kain alvish v'chashish aldam. Whatever it is, it's some sort of poison. Ashabema masos adam taltoi. They're there to kill people. Ro she teida sheishbem ta'alois. They have a purpose. Why? She afal pi she misu kashe achlu. Le misu kashe ashat chaguf. Some of these, even if they kill you when you eat it, but if you use it for external use only, it's good. And if you realize that there is some benefit in the poison of a viper, certainly something that is less poisonous. Now, what is interesting, obviously, is today we realize that adarabah, poisons are extremely useful because every poison works with every poison works by interrupting with a certain mechanism. And what's bad, so if you take a poison and you drink it and you die, that's because, let's say, it arrested a certain system in the body, it blocked something. So if you dilute it, and then you can get what you need in terms of the right type of a therapeutic dose of something which paralyzes, like, for instance, atropine in the eye, where medical examination, you put in a drop of it and it paralyzes the muscles in the eye, and therefore the doctor is able to look into it. The eye doesn't close, the muscles don't shut the lens. Too much of it will kill you. You know, after you put it on an arrow and you shoot the person, it'll paralyze muscles, the person needs to breathe, and so on. So really, everything that's poisonous, it's a question of dosage. Take it down to the appropriate dose. There are no things that are inherently bad and poisonous. Anything that affects the nervous system may have some sort of therapeutic effect on nerve disease and so on. So he says, and then he says, besides, he says, sometimes you can put it on the body and use it as an external. And if you see that even with the poison of a viper, there is a toalus to it. And there are medications that are made from these because you simply, as soon as you recognize the mechanism, you dilute it and you use it for the same effect in a therapeutic way. Okay. So now that I've told you, everything in the world is there for man. And that's true. In other words, everything in the world has its effect on man and affects man. So now the question is, so what's man there for? Everything is there for man's sake. Great. Okay, now the question is, what's man there for? They made a long list of what a person can do. Most animals and trees have one activity they engage in. And therefore one tachlis. A date tree gives dates. They all seem to have one or two major activities. An ant spends its entire life gathering and hoarding stuff, so that's him. A person does many things, and the truth is, man is extraordinarily versatile. He can mimic any animal and can make use of any animal. They said, okay, let's look at all his activities and find out where does the arrow point? So I'm going to look at man's activities that he's capable of doing, and man is capable of doing anything, almost. And I'm going to say, okay, what is the purpose he's created for, and what is there to enable it? So the one thing is Tzir HaMeskolas V'Idiyas HaMitzvah Shehen. Man is the most capable in terms of an abstract thought and conceptual knowledge, to be able to understand something not as it's a physical sense. So an animal understands a wall simply as the place that if you walk into it, you get a bang on your head. Man is able to understand a wall in conceptual sense. So he says, Ki efshe she'etachlis ha'odam lecho lishas livol o livnos kir lis melech. You can't say that the mundane activities are man's purpose. Fishkolam mikrim karim loy leisivatz muso. These are all things he does, but you can't say in any way it really develops him as a person. And everything else, there are animals that do the same thing. You know, building, we build stuff, great. Beavers build dams. We count, well, crows count, and so on. And I'd like to, again, add a point here. One of the way in which the secular world looks at it and says, you see, man is not so fantastic, because almost every activity we can ascribe to man, we have an animal who does something similar to it, but a little more primitive. So a man can build homes, or beavers can build dams, so just man is more sophisticated than a beaver, but it's the same quality of knowing how to build. Man can count, crows know how to count, I think to 5, 6, whatever it is, so man is just a little more sophisticated and so on. It's the other way around. All of the activities that man is capable of doing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu let animals do it, to show you that yes, this is not his main activity, this is not what he was created for, this is just a tool that he needs. Leharaya, that I can create something else with it. And man's only function is not the type of mind that figures out stuff. In other words, smarter animals can figure out how to take a rock, smash it against a seashell, and get the food from inside it. So that type of understanding, where I know how to make use of this world to give me what I need, is not a human understanding. So he says, it's the understanding of things conceptually, conceptualizing things, that makes a man what he is. Ki odam koin sheyaskal omer ko behemois. Ki ein odam nidosha b'lechayim ela b'igoyen, lefi shuchay bal higoyen. Ritzayin dileme b'igoyen tzir hamuskolos. Tzir hamuskolos means conceptualizing. I can sort of picture in a certain way a concept. No animal, it's putting it down as an axiom, it makes a lot of sense, can conceptualize, can take something like justice and have the sense of justice. Vanichba shemuskolos, and of all of those things that are the most important of it, is tzir achdus Hashem svar shoyimam, the understanding of Kadosh Baruch Hu as he is be'emes, as one, umashe korach b'zimin aloikis, and all that follows from it. Lefi sheshar chachmas ene l'stam b'ek d'agir chazoyinis. All of the chachmas are simply a road to that chachma. It's the most conceptual chachma we have, and this is the core of a person is. I can discuss this forever, he says. Okay, we'll hold it here. And he still hasn't completed his answer yet, and we will see. We'll see in the as we go on to the next piece. In the next three paragraphs, he's going to give us the full answer. Okay, a question? Okay, a good moed, all the best. Call it a bye.